Dark wings.
Dork words.
A Game of Thrones podcast.
Season 4, episode 10. For children. Welcome back, everybody, to this Gangbusters Hardcore Steeper episode.
Bringing it home.
I'm your host, Chuck Davis, and with me this week are...
Craig McCallie.
Mike Hergert.
Chris Voorhees.
Yeah! In the house.
Chris is back.
Welcome back, Chris. Missed you.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Good to be here.
Feel free to spew forth any comments from the last few episodes.
You know, I meant to go back and listen to the last couple podcasts so I could take you guys to task on every little minor thing you might have messed up, but I was bad. I didn't listen.
Did you edit the last one?
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw it just came up.
It's up there.
Okay.
Just wait, you know, as any listener might expect at, you know, 1 a.m. on a Friday.
That's when you got it up.
every Friday I got it up at 1 a.m.
It's the only way you can.
He's
very niche.
One time a day.
I'm sure there's a word for it.
It's Latin.
Are you ready for 42 weeks off?
I'm unprepared for the downtime. I don't know. This episode culminated, I think, everything that I was waiting for, you know, over the last season or more. And I just realized, kind of watching it play out, that this is the pinnacle. This is the peak of the story in the books. The end of the third book. That's pretty much right where we're at. I mean, they even got beyond into some of the cooler moments of the fourth book with Brienne and some other kind of timelines a little bit. And they, you know, apart from avoiding a couple cool things that haven't happened and may never happen on the show, but this is as good as it gets, I think. And they still managed to pull out some surprise sequences, like the skeleton attack right at the base of the giant weirwood north of the wall. Mm-hmm. That was amazing. So some cool surprises. But everything cool that I love about the books has already happened now on the show.
It's all downhill. Yeah, a whole lot of nothing going on for the next couple seasons, maybe.
I don't know. I mean, it's wide open for them to just kind of go off course, off script, and just make it magic HBO style, which I'm a little worried about. I don't want this show to turn into True Blood.
Yeah.
But it kind of feels like they've kind of got carte blanche at this point to deviate to their heart's content.
We'll see, I guess.
Two sleeper books, fan sleeper, as far as the fans are concerned, the least favorite books, right, coming up. So maybe they will go to George and say, listen, we want to keep all the people that are watching the show and add some new ones maybe too. How do you feel about this? And it seems like so far he's said okay to a lot of things.
Yeah. Well, I think we imagine an awful lot of sort of conversations between Martin and the show's producers that just don't really happen.
Maybe.
I don't think they have as much dialogue going on as I like to imagine they do.
But how can we disprove the existence of them? I put it to you.
We can't,
nope,
I guess.
No one insider.
Although there was a recent interview with George R.R. Martin where he sort of acknowledged, you know, apart from writing his one episode per season, he laments some of the things that have fallen by the wayside. And he made sort of like the flapping of the butterfly's wings, like one, like, deviation decision they made in season one is like the repercussions from that
were felt in Brazil. The butterfly wing.
Something about the jet stream always blows the butterfly wings to Brazil.
The bullet with butterfly wings
in Brazil.
But, well, so this episode, I mean, this was like gangbusters, like every single scene was heavy hitting.
They did a good job of hitting all the main storylines, and I guess it was a little longer.
I wondered last week how they were going to hit them all, and I guess now that I've seen it, I'm like, oh, yeah, like that.
Yep.
Perfect sense.
There it is. Yeah. There it is.
Because, I mean, I guess a couple of people we didn't see this week, but there was nowhere else to really go from. We kind of had the finished up with Sansa and last week. And
not ready for Moat Cailin.
Theon, yeah. I think those are the only two kind of stories we didn't see this week.
Right. And both
no
of
Marjorie
those,
or anything or
both of those scenes with Sansa and Theon were kind of pulled from A Feast for Crows material, so we're already ahead of the game as far as their timelines go. And this one episode brought everybody right up to the point where that stuff happens.
Yeah. What do we start off with this episode? Were we at the wall?
Was it John?
No. It's John walking
to meet Mance.
Yeah.
Great long shot over the bodies. Yeah. As he walks out, all the field littered with bodies. It was nice.
Mance had a good commanding presence, and that was a great sort of little tete-a-tete that they had in Mance's tent, where Mance laid it out. He's like, we want protection.
Yeah, we're not going to take over the South.
We're not coming after you. We just want to hide behind the wall just like you are.
Yeah.
What do they care? I mean, the North is so huge and pretty much empty. Anyway, just let the damn wildlings in. Who cares?
Well, did they fail to sort of establish that on the show? Or maybe it's just sort of dragged out so long that it's not really fresh. But the threat of the others is still just mythological past history. And the only real threat to the Night's Watch in recent living memory
is the wildlings.
Yeah.
Right. Who was it last episode that disbelieved the whole thing? I can't remember. Someone was like, that's bullshit. That's not even a real
thing. Right.
Still Grumpkins and all that, you know. Despite now probably 4/5 of the known world being kind of scared of it.
I can't wait till we see a real Grumpkin. It's going to just devastate everybody.
Maybe the Grumpkins are the children.
The children, the fireball flinging children.
Where are the children?
Whee! I believe the future are the Grumpkins. Whitney Houston.
Take their hand and let them lead the way. Let them show the fireballs they have inside.
But so why? Why? We just, it hasn't been fantasy
shit
fiction
got
enough.
Arcane.
We got a
shit got very arcane. Yeah. Like, suddenly we were in the middle of a true, what we're used to for high fantasy series. Fireballs, popping through the, into the ground.
And that's, I suppose you got to do something visual with the supernatural element. I mean, other than the dragons, but like the children of the forest, they never have any sort of flashy powers or anything. I mean, they just
the warded cave where they just ran and dissolved. I felt like I was watching the Brendan Fraser Mummy or something. You know, like oh, all right,
that was cool though.
Yeah,
it was all right.
The idea,
no cold hands though. Pretty disappointed in that.
So what part did Cold Hands play in the book equivalent of that sequence?
Well, they meet, don't they run into him, and he's guiding them back to the old tree man.
So Cold Hands sort of saves Sam and Gilly in the woods.
Right.
And guides them to the abandoned Night's Watch fort that's down the wall a ways, where there's sort of a secret passage
through the well,
and that's where in the books that's where Sam meets Brandon. They pass,
that's right,
going opposite directions,
and then Cold Hands basically guides Bran and company all the way up to the Weirwood.
Yeah,
at the end,
where there's some kind of attack, although I don't think it's magical skeletons. I think it's just wights that they were fighting in the books, wasn't it?
Well,
I haven't read that far.
Aren't the skeletons essentially whites?
I suppose if they're old enough, their flesh has just dropped off the bones and the bones are still animated.
I mean, how long have they been waiting to ambush somebody under all that ice? It looked like quite a while.
Right.
Well, it's not a heavily well-trodden ice patch.
But I love the implication.
Somebody stepped on a secret trigger.
that there's strategy involved. That there is basically two forces, and that the whites and the others have the knowledge that there's the enemy encampment under this tree, and that there's an effort to stop Brandon Stark, whatever mystical ability, whatever his destiny is, the others are somehow aware of it and are scheming to try to stop it.
Well, I don't know if that was implied necessarily.
That's what I got. I mean, it's not just sort of a random attack.
I got that from the show. Did you ever get that from the books, though?
No.
I mean,
from the books, like the Children of the Forest are aware of and opposed to the others.
Are they?
In a base sense. I think so. Aren't they?
Opposed to? I mean, they just seem to be part of the same phenomenological universe, but they don't really have any antagonism.
Is that me just sort of connecting the dots or reading between the lines kind of a thing? I mean, like, the way Melisandre talks, and they showed it briefly in the previous scenes where she tells Stannis the real battle isn't among these five kingdoms, it's north of the wall.
Right.
So in her mind, like, the icy bad that's coming from beyond the wall is diametrically opposed to the...
Hot fire.
The hot fire of R'hllor. So, I mean, the Song
Good
of
fire.
Ice and Fire.
Good
that's,
fire, icy bad.
Hot fire.
But it also seems like the Children of the Forest are kind of the protectors of man. Like, you know, even though they're sort of shunned by or forgotten by man,
right?
They're sort of, you know, they had sort of some, they cohabitated peacefully among the first men once upon a time, and they, you know, old Nan's stories and the old woman that they meet.
You know,
on the
protectors of man, they're sort of. They're not. I don't see them as
like the whole thing about the dragon glass, for instance. Isn't that like sort of like a gift from the Children of the Forest to men?
Them.
Or I don't know. Again, maybe I'm just.
I mean, I always thought that they knew about the dragon glass and they used them to, I guess, defend themselves against the.
No symbiosis with any other groups. You don't think they're just
with
part of
the
environment?
Children?
Yeah,
no.
They're just kind of.
I think they kind of don't want anything to do with.
Anything.
Humans. I really don't. I mean,
yeah.
They've kind of...
Because
they're not just in the north, right? They're in that one island, but they've kind of gone back into the woods, and they don't want anything to do with these crazy...
They're in all the weirwoods.
Yeah.
Seeing through the eyes of those heart trees, but even those are kind of few and far between anymore. It's not well explained.
No.
That, you know, in the books, let alone the show.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think they're trying to create some sort of more direct something to move the plot because the books.
Maybe we know from the last two books. Maybe in book eight.
Book eight. Well, didn't somebody post that there's going to be another book?
It was speculated. I don't know if it was backed up. Didn't Martin say something about it?
Like he's going to live long enough to write book seven.
Martin's editor was speculating that
seven books for
take
seven kingdoms.
But what about the Eighth Kingdom?
Can he just sit down and bang his shit out
Valeria
in a weekend?
Something?
Man,
you know,
what the hell?
Really put his nose to the ground.
On his DOS system.
Yeah. What is he writing? WordPerfect or something?
WordPerfect. I love that program.
WordStar. He doesn't want all that stupid autocorrect and junk.
By the time his editor gets it, she's just like, what the fuck is this? Like... 1,000 phone calls.
Now this, I guess, I thought this was a really good episode, even though I'm usually the first to be very critical of the contrived scenes. You know, like Brienne has a big battle
with the Hound.
Yeah,
is it with the Hound?
No. This episode. But
yeah. But I mean, in the book,
she has
a
big
battle
with a total
tertiary,
unimportant character.
Right, and that
who
this sort
basically
of takes
the place was
like, of that.
Yeah, the Stark girl's up here. It's just follow me up here to this like point where you're going to get ambushed by me and my bandit buddies.
Right. In reality, Arya was nowhere to be found. I mean, she's not.
Brienne never
same,
found a Stark
no,
girl in the book.
Right.
Two books later, Brienne never actually found a Stark girl.
But she's only in one of the books, to be fair. Right. I mean.
Right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. The next two books are kind of two halves of one
original
chapter in one period of time.
Feast day.
That's how I'm reading it, too.
Are you? Yeah. Are you really? Oh,
Mike's good. Feast dancing.
Have you planned it out? Have you looked up your guide?
Yeah, I have it marked on my Google thing. It's got, I'll read this chapter, and then there's even some like in the book where it's like, nope, skip this chapter, and then come back to it like later.
Right.
Nice.
So,
because it would give things away.
I'm glad I didn't read originally, I think, because it would suck to have like... well, what happens to this character? Oh, I have to wait another like 2 years or three right. years to find out.
Yeah.
Try waiting 7 years.
Is that what it was?
From the time I finished the third book to the point where all five books were out was like 7 years, yeah. But hey, I made it.
Early adopter syndrome.
I like
the ease into it. So you're doing the feast dance. That's awesome. I'm tempted to do it too.
If I have any business continuing podcasting next year, I almost have to do it.
Have to reread.
I'm fucking worthless.
Yeah. I'm good.
What?
No.
What?
No. I was agreeing that I have to read that too. Not that you're worthless.
Well,
you have great worth.
He of great worth.
But yeah, I'm gonna need to read the last two books because I can't remember anything. Of course, it might have absolutely nothing to do with the next two seasons.
From this point on, it might not matter.
Yeah,
it might not be that important.
Yeah,
I mean, take the showdown between Brienne and the Hound, for instance.
Okay.
I mean, in the last few scenes of Brienne on this show, they've basically carved out a different path for her that deviates completely from a whole book's worth of chapters. POV chapters of hers from A Feast for Crows.
Because they were all pointless.
Well, that's clearly the producers of the show thought so.
Yeah.
But not only did they cut out the unnecessary stuff, they came up with like a really cool way to bring her mm-hmm. arc and the Hound's arc to a natural...
And then Arya's yeah. arc, too.
Super yeah. logical and mm-hmm. super yeah. interesting and thrilling.
And a good way to wrap up that part of Arya's
right.
arc before she leaves to go to Braavos.
Which,
no, I thought it was great. I mean, as far as screenplay writing for a television show.
Totally.
Because, yeah, all that stuff with Brienne, whenever that happens. Yawn.
Arya is now definitely the most jaded 11-year-old in yeah. the Seven Kingdoms.
Wow, that Ouch. Whole scene of her crouching over the Hounds.
And not killing
saying,
them.
And saying nothing for the longest time.
Yeah, not flinching, not feeling, I mean, a twinge of sympathy or yeah. empathy or like being even tortured or divided or...
Just emotionless.
Emotionless.
Robotic.
Which I actually thought was kind of weird because, I mean, the Hound, it seems like, I mean, she's like, people are coming, stop taking a shit or whatever, you know, get out here, like, who knows what's going on. And then, I don't know, really without... reason she's kind of just like won't kill him right away, and then he has to pretty much
bring up
the butcher boy and stuff again. Like,
did she not kill him because it's more cruel to let him bleed out?
Yeah, that's,
or because
I don't think so.
Because she couldn't bring herself to kill him because she did feel some kinship to him or some.
Neither. Yeah. I think she's just, well. You remember, you know, dead men don't need silver.
Right. She takes his bag.
Yep. And just like, it's all super matter.
Well,
of fact
you're
to me,
done now.
You know. Yep. Just.
And then, yeah, the seeds for this moment were planted by that scene with the farmer that the Hound mm-hmm. stole right. from.
She didn't say it. I was sure yeah. she would say it.
I don't. Yeah, and I didn't know if she.
She didn't have to, but I, right. I didn't remember that moment specifically. But yeah, you're absolutely right. That was the parallel.
The Hound does get a better end than I think in the book. I mean, he would have been dead just from the battle. They battle the guys in the
inn.
In the inn, he gets kind of wounded, and then.
It festers.
Yeah, he doesn't want because he doesn't want the fire to treat his wound, yeah. and they just stop under a tree, and he's just kind of like, well,
and that's right. I mean, they even included that whole bit of his wound bothering him and
right.
her telling him, but it wasn't that wound that was
it
his undoing
right.
at all.
Because I think so. He gets his ear screwed up in the battle with Brienne when she bites it, and that's I think what happens. Like he gets kind of a. Pretty bad wound on his ear or something like in the inn.
Doesn't
in the book
Brienne get
wounded
by someone at an inn?
I don't know. I haven't read that far.
there are several interesting encounters that happen at an inn that may or may not be the same inn. But that it's neither here nor there as far as the show goes.
It's a composite inn.
I love that whole encounter, really, between Arya and Brienne, and then Brienne and the Hound. Pod was kind of superfluous in that moment. And the fact that it all takes place in the Mountains of the Moon, which is that sort of mountainous, dangerous, no man's land that was characterized so well in the first season, where Lady Caitlin, when she has Tyrion captive and is taking him to the Eyrie,
right.
and they're like all... on guard because of all the dangerous wild tribesmen that live in those mountains.
Right.
So, like, on the way back down, when Tyrion and Bronn were leaving the Eyrie, and they basically were like, well, it's just you and me. There's no way we're going to survive traveling this country.
Right.
So we might as well not hide our campfire and this and that.
And yet the Hound and Arya and Brienne and Pod are all just wander all the way to the Bloody Gate.
Traipsing along, completely defenseless and completely unconcerned.
Yeah.
So that's a blunder. But it's almost like they wish, I bet they could wish they could go back to season one and not make that terrain seem as dangerous as it was in the books, just right. So they could pull this off.
Yeah. I mean, it seemed like that the whole fight like just reminded me of like Highlander or something, like Brienne and the Hound fighting up on some cliffs and like...
There can be only one Scotland
or Ireland. Yeah. Arya just kind of runs off and hides. Like she's like, no, I don't want to go with... Stealthy. You either.
Stealthy she is. She
blended right
She's
in.
Like, the Hound says, you know, her dad's dead.
Good dialogue
her
by the
aunt's
Hound
dead. Right her then. Mom's dead. Mm-hmm. Her brother's dead.
I'm looking after her now. And yeah. She's like, are you? Is that what you're doing? He's like, yeah. It's like, yeah, good for you. Good on you. Yeah, that's what's happening now. There's no ransom anymore. It's just you and your gal pal.
It's, as yeah. usual, the Hound's the only one with a realistic point of view. He's the only one in the entire show with a realistic point of view.
Well, fatalistic.
Yeah.
Well, that's realistic.
That's what could... Yeah, I mean...
There's room... I mean...
Where's the hopeful character in this TV show?
Quit trying
show?
To make us feel good. Come on.
Daenerys has got...
Oh, please.
A vision.
Come on.
Uh-huh.
She just...
Too busy
just
locking
her dragons
up. Trap
her children
up.
Right.
Jon Snow is still an idealist.
Come on.
No. Varys has designs traitor? for the yeah. Seven Kingdoms.
Varys, he may have some hope left.
Tyrion will bounce back. but what about, I mean, so Arya and Brienne meeting is cool. I mean, usually when they throw two characters together in a scene that isn't from the books, it's kind of like a mixed bag.
But ultimately pointless, because now what's going to be the fallout from them having met? Nothing. I mean, where's Brienne's character going to go? Now she knows Arya was there and doesn't want to be saved.
The Brienne from the books would be like pulling her hair out, just like, oh my God, after all these years of slogging around trying to save a Stark girl, I had her in my grasp and I let her get away. And only because Pod says they went that way.
She went that way, yeah.
And in the meantime, the Hound and Arya are yelling at each other a few minutes later.
Kill me!
Yeah, the Hound gets, he's almost getting kind of like weepy there. I felt, it was like, I have to bring up all this stuff to get this girl to kill me, and then she doesn't do it. I was like, ooh,
cold.
She's hard. Yeah.
Cold and hard, like steel.
How about that cool moment at the docks where she pulls out the iron coin of Braavos?
Yep.
It says Valar Morghulis, and the guy's instantly deferential.
But it seemed like sort of... The last gasp. I mean, she doesn't really... Does she know what she's getting
she
into
doesn't
really
know.
At all?
She doesn't. She doesn't at all, but I mean, she...
But what the fuck?
She doesn't
at this
care,
point,
I don't
yeah.
think.
Yeah, she's got to go somewhere. Oh, wait. I have this. And you're from Braavos?
But that's true to the book, too. I mean, she didn't fully understand what she was getting into. She just sort of knew she had sort of an ace up her sleeve, and she played it at the right moment.
Yeah.
I mean, she's cagey, but she's not brilliant, you know?
Yeah, because, I mean, I think in the book, she kind of gets to the town and... tries to sell the horse to get, you know,
right.
some yeah. more silver, and then, you know, it's not enough. I thought she was, like, going to pull out her bag of silver, and he's going to be like, oh, that's not enough. He never really says that. It's just like, you don't have enough. I guess it was just implied that she didn't have enough silver to
she
pay
tried to
for
buy
passage.
Her way. She tried to buy passage, and it was only, like, a last-ditch thing where she tried the
right.
coin. But, I mean, they boiled it down to its essence.
Yeah, no, I didn't have any problem with that. So I'm sure you guys covered this last week or the week before, but what's up with Sansa?
Sansa the Black Swan?
Yeah.
As
I
like
love
to call
the...
Her.
I don't know who posted the Sith Lord reference between... you know what I'm talking about?
Someone posted a comment.
Little
Master
finger
and apprentice.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I thought that was pretty good, but also kind of out of nowhere.
It was, but it's exciting.
Yeah. Again, it's something they can build on for the next couple of seasons, even though there's really nothing there in the source material.
She's clearly now a dark necromancer. So that's where this is going.
She could probably fire a fireball off at will. She's just a few experience points away from memorizing. That was a case of them sort of boiling it down to its essence too, but also jumping the gun a little bit as far as where we should expect Sansa to be in the books.
Yeah,
but I mean, shit, I don't know. Maybe they're schooling Martin a little bit in the art of let's cut to the chase and get to the good stuff. You know,
yeah.
Where he got lost in the details. They're like watching this episode. I was thinking, I guess I've sort of thought this before, but it's sort of a fun, creative puzzle to be in the shoes of Benioff and Weiss.
Benihana.
You've got the source material, and you've got the ability of the production to pull it off. And then the puzzle is like, what do you keep? What do you change? What is the show able to articulate? And what is, you know, boiling it down to the essence? What do we absolutely need to salvage from the source material to keep the story pure but doable?
And how can we tie certain characters together so we don't have to recast the whole?
Well, that's the fun part of it. It's just kind of like, we want these characters to get from A to B. What are some cool shortcuts we can do? And I think that battle between Brienne and the Hound is one of the most perfect, ingenious examples of them doing it right.
Yeah, you know, and I think I agree with you. If anything, it makes more sense than all the meandering Martin did in the books, because
totally,
you really could have just eliminated all those Brienne chapters.
We could have done it without Pod and her ever really.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Hooking up, you know.
Well, the thing is, if Martin had written all the books and then gone back and done a revision, he might have come up with something like this. But since you're publishing as you go along, there's no turning back. So, he's still writing good stuff, but it's feeling more and more sort of tertiary, unnecessary. It all feeds and informs the overall narrative, but it's like spin-off stories of Dorne and the Iron Islands and stuff, where the show's producers are just like, yeah, we can skip all of that. You know?
Well, we'll see. I mean,
we're gonna see Dorne shit next season, though.
We're gonna see Dorne, yeah. And I think there's gonna be,
so says the casting,
the Tyrion storyline from.
Is Varys gonna stick Feast with Tyrion? Crows, that's my prediction. It, like my prediction. So at the very tail end, again, the final chapter of Tyrion in King's Landing boiled down to its essence. You know, where it's almost like an afterthought. You think after all of Arya's bit, it's like, wait, there's still one more chapter left, one more story to tell, mm-hmm. And it's, how is Tyrion going to get out of being executed? And it's, Jaime shows up. They're running down the hallway with the torch. Go this way to freedom. Quick hug. And then Tyrion goes the other way. And, you know, in the book, there's a lot more conversation, deliberation,
between
explanation.
Between Varys and Tyrion.
Between Jaime and Tyrion, right. First, explaining everything. And Jaime and Tyrion don't part tearfully hugging.
Right.
It's kind of more like, Tyrion's, you were going to let me die. They're super pissed at each other. And there's the whole conversation about Tysha. Isn't that the moment where they have the conversation about Tysha?
Yeah. And
where Jaime finally comes Jaime clean.
Tells him.
And basically says, Tysha, going again, all the way back to season one, where Tyrion is in the Mountains of the Moon with Bronn, and they know that the mountain men are closing in on him. So they might as well have a heart-to-heart. And he tells the story of, when I was a young boy, I was married to a whore, you know. But he didn't know she was a whore at the time. He only found out later. So the story was, like, he met this young girl, farm girl. Mm-hmm. They fell in love, head over heels for one another. They were secretly married. And then Tywin found out about it and ordered a bunch of Lannister troops to rape her. And they told Tyrion that she had been a whore that Jaime hired for him because he felt sorry for him, and then ordered all the troops to rape her, and then Tyrion tearfully like raped her too. It was just an ugly, ugly scene.
And then they gave her like a gold coin at the end or something.
That's right. Always pay your debts, or just we're a bunch of dicks. And so Tyrion, that's just scarred him for life. And then he falls in love with Shay, another whore. and all that kind of stuff just is all messed up in his head. But in that moment when Jamie is releasing him, saving him, Jamie comes clean and he says, you know, Taisha, she never was a whore. She truly was in love with you. And Father made me tell you that she was a whore so that you would divorce her or whatever.
Right.
Which is heartbreaking. I mean, so he had found true love, and she really was a pure, real relationship, and it was all ruined by Tywin, and it was that little extra bit of hatred for his father
that made him do what he did.
That maybe is the greatest disservice that this episode did to the source material, is not touching on any of that stuff.
Right.
That he just sort of is like, I could escape this way, but I'll just go down this hallway and see what's happening.
Yeah.
I wanted to see him climb the huge ladder all the way up the...
Right. Yeah,
little
exactly.
With his little midget feet.
That's right. Little midget feet on the ladder rungs was tricky, and the explanation of the tunnels through the castle and the way the little birds of Varys worked and all that detail was lost.
Yeah.
But
as far as the, I mean, I think like in a lot of different examples, they take the antagonism between two characters, they make it a little less abstract for the TV show than they did in the books. Right. So now they have the, you know, really Tyrion's just pissed because he sentenced him to death. And it's that simple.
Well, not just that, but also the hypocriticalness of having Shay in his bed.
Right. Yeah.
Which is enough of a fuck you.
Right. It's enough to sell that Tyrion's going to, you know, murder his father.
Tywin picked a bad time, first time ever to say, you're my son. You know?
It's brilliant seeing Tywin on the defensive like that, but playing the strong hand,
being positive the whole time that he wasn't actually in any real danger.
He
was surprised when he said, "You shot me."
Yeah,
you shot me.
Right,
which is a very ham-fisted and ineloquent thing to say, even you know when you just got shot on the shitter. But for him, he never loses his, you know, what he's about to say. And you shot me.
Yeah.
Yep.
Couldn't believe it.
Yeah. Put that down. Let's go talk. Like a couple of minutes. Oh, shit.
Don't call her a whore again. Oh.
No. And like Paula, our friend Paula pointed out, the second bolt did not go into the bowels.
Right.
It went into the neck or something.
Yeah.
Like a shoulder.
Surprise.
Obviously not a groin shot. Yeah. That second arrow.
Not sure why they didn't do that.
Really? What? Yeah. I mean, they've gone just about everywhere else. What's the problem with a little
groin shot?
Groin shot. I mean, where they draw the line?
What about the whole Tywin Cersei conversation where she's like,
"Yeah,
I don't think that happens in the book at all."
No, yeah, that's
right, but it's created. Like,
and
might
her,
as well say it because you know Tywin's gonna die. So
and her going back and manipulating
her
Jaime,
most manipulative, her most manipulative,
right?
Yeah,
that never happens either in the book,
right?
So I'm curious how they're going to leave those characters. So now all of a sudden you have, you know, Jaime and Cersei who are...
Well, because Jaime said he was going to go to Casterly Rock.
He'll figure it out.
Yeah. But I guess maybe that was...
Doesn't really matter anymore because he said that to Tywin and Tywin's dead.
Yeah, that's true.
So it doesn't really matter what Cersei told Tywin now because Tywin's dead now too.
What was Cersei's motivation in that moment to like win Jaime back? What did she want him to do specifically?
Protect her from Tywin.
Okay. So she knew she had crossed Tywin, and she's like, I need somebody's got to have my back.
That's what I'm thinking, yeah.
But then the next thing we see Jaime do is release Tyrion, which is the last thing Cersei would have wanted. So, I mean, it's a little murky there.
Yeah, I agree.
In TV logic, she, like, gets Jaime.
Well, she didn't want to be married. She just doesn't want to be married off.
Right.
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 No, I understand, but it's just kind of like she does the one thing, Jaime. I want Jaime to do something, but then the next thing he does isn't what it doesn't have anything to do with that. It's neither here nor there. I mean, it's okay. It's okay.
Right.
I get it. There's more going on, but it still is a kind of a clunky thing plot wise.
It is, which makes me think that her going back and manipulating Jaime is going to play a role in whatever they're planning for next season.
Does it basically absolve him of rape charges?
The flesh, as always, was weak. It's always weak.
Well, it goes back to my point, is that she never really felt like she was being raped. There was no rape, in other words.
I don't know. It seems like it's a bad idea to get in bed with Cersei no matter what.
Yeah.
I agree.
Well, but they never got in a bed. It's on
yeah, it's always on an altar or dais
or you know, table,
floor.
You gotta push away your
tower.
Book of accomplishments. Fuck sister on table. That's
yeah, that was maybe kind of a nice little pushing the book off.
It's a little thing, but the Book of Accomplishments was so beautifully, like, sort of scripted with the big, bold artwork, like the chapter of Jaime and all that. But in the books, it's sort of characterized as it's just the Lord Commander of the Kingsguard. It's his, like, he keeps it as a personal journal. Like, whoever is in charge of the Kingsguard writes it all out. And it's not like some monastery full of monks that are, like, carefully redrafting it and making the pages beautiful, but... All right, it doesn't matter. Forget it. Especially Jaime, who's like, you know, left-handed or right-handed. Yeah. He's not going to make his page that pretty.
Wrong-handed.
Right. I guess Sir Barristan would have, you know, made that page super pretty when he was in charge.
Wow, we are treading into minutiae now.
What about the whole...
let's go across the nose.
Yeah, Danny, yeah. Sir Barristan. He's speaking of standing Sir Barristan. There.
A brutal scene.
A
brutal scene.
Everything that they covered with Danny was great, though.
Kind of the old people.
Three great moments.
There's slaves who want to be, who are free, but like their slave life was better, and they want to...
Yeah, that's going to hang heavy. I mean, that's just kind of like, you can't just come in and say everybody's free, and it's just going to all work out. It's like, it's complicated. So she's figuring that out.
And she's figuring out that she has a shit job, too, sometimes, you know?
And they covered a lot of ground in that subplot very efficiently, you know? I mean, they've taken all the big themes from that end of the story and just pulled them all into a couple of scenes. And they basically did it all with plot exposition in the throne room, right, through the audiences or whatever. But they really, really did a good job with that, I thought. Without doing anything that was, like, felt like they had to make something up that wasn't in the books.
They didn't patently offend you?
Right. Well, you know, no, offended is a little strong, but yeah, I mean, I just thought of those two halves of the story. Was done well enough without pulling the kind of crap like Brienne and the Hound meeting, without having to, you know...
Resort to that.
They did it subtly, maybe?
Right, well...
But effectively.
I mean, they didn't have to bring in anything that doesn't actually happen in the books to tie the story and make it watchable. Which, and I didn't even have a big problem because that was a great scene. And I thought, like you said, it was probably better than what happened in the books. But they did a really good job of condensing.
Cherry-picking all the right moments.
Right, exactly.
I mean, they laid the groundwork with that amazing shot of Drogon killing the sheep or whatever, the goats, a few episodes ago.
Yep.
So you didn't have to see Drogon kill the kid.
Right.
You knew exactly how that went down because you saw it happen with the livestock.
And they flash back to Mormont warning her, you can't control... No one can control a dragon, not even their mother.
Right.
And that whole sequence of her luring the two dragons down into the catacombs...
That was brilliant.
It's the best dragon scene. I mean, maybe apart from Drogon killing the goat.
Did she really have to push the stone back in front? I mean, she already
had
them
chained up.
It's kind of mean.
She doesn't want to be reminded.
Well, you know, she's
putting your kids in chains.
She's not afraid to make the hard decisions.
Yeah, I guess.
Well, they were contained, but maybe she didn't want anyone to see that they had to be contained. Like part of the myth of her power is the dragons will do her bidding.
Yeah.
And if there's any hint that the dragons are beyond her control, then that's a whole different story.
I think you're overthinking it. I think it was just an emotional shot. They're just making it more emotional.
No, I'm not just talking about the shot. I mean, the whole way it's sort of characterized in A Dance with Dragons, it's a dirty secret that she can't control her dragons anymore. So it's not just she's concerned because people are going to die, but she's concerned because she's gotten this far based on the fact that she can control the dragons and she can't control them anymore. So forget about the public affairs of it all. Like, she personally is losing her ability to...
Well, this isn't going to endear any dragons to her.
The dragons are going to be a little pissy about it. Let's be honest. They're not going to like it down
and
there.
And she's only got the two of them, right?
Yeah, Drogon is still on the make.
Around.
Yeah.
Well, does in the books, does Drogon ever get captured?
We can't talk about that. Don't talk about it.
Okay, fine.
Suffice to say that the situation that Dany's in with her dragons here in this episode is not far removed from where they are in the books.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Bran's scene with the old dude under the tree. I mean, it's cryptic for sure, but he says you'll never walk again, but you will fly.
They didn't show enough of how he's basically become one with the tree. He was just kind of hanging out in this room.
He wasn't like sort of tree. Growing right. into the roots or whatever.
Yeah.
When he said that,
with a thousand eyes,
like sort of on the heels of all the different sort of three-eyed crow dreams that Bran had had. I think where he even was maybe flying as the three-eyed crow in a few of them or something like that. When he says, you will fly, I took that to mean through warging. You know, like you're going to warg. You can warg. So you can warg into a bird and you'll fly that way. But it occurred to me that maybe Bran is destined to be one of the dragon riders. Like he'll fly by riding a dragon.
Can he warg a dragon?
Fuck. Why not? Why the fuck not?
Well, that's wishful thinking, Chuck. I think Bran is going to be in a hole in the ground with a tree growing out of his ass for the next millennium.
Maybe so, but...
warging a dragon.
Yeah.
While warging a dragon.
Maybe that's the secret. Like maybe that's the way that the Targaryens controlled the dragons for centuries.
Maybe. I feel like they're immune somehow. Non-wargable.
I had never even considered that, whether
dragons
had some sort of psychic connection to their riders.
Is that even on the internet? Can we be the first people to suggest that?
Is Bran going to end up being thrown out of a moon door? Is that where this is going?
By his sister?
Robin.
I'm like, what else flies in this show?
Right. Robin will ascend to the Iron Throne, and moon doors will be installed in all the kingdoms.
It'd be good to be in the moon door installation business, then.
Run by the Hound, who survives. Pragmatist that he is.
Well, I think his brother's, I guess, looks like is maybe going to survive now.
Oh, that's a great scene, too. And also never sort of explicitly shown in the books, but I love that scene.
Yeah. So is there any controversy in the books about whether or not the Mountain lives and that affecting the judgment against Tyrion?
The outcome of the trial? I don't think it really comes into play because I feel like Tyrion gets away before it's really resolved one way or the other anyway.
Well, but so in the TV show, it's like right at the end, he's like, okay, Tyrion's sentenced to death, even though it's not clear that the Mountain's still alive.
Right.
So if what happens in the if whole both trial got, wait, by combat, happen- if they both died,
it's yeah, a little ham-fisted. Happens. Yeah. It was shocking enough that they were both like basically killed each other on the field of battle.
Mm-hmm.
Tywin didn't have to say, all right, well, the thing I said was going to happen is going to happen, and court's adjourned, you know? It's like, he didn't have to say anything. It's like, shocking enough, like, this is a fucked up situation. Let's just leave it at that. You don't have to pass judgment yet.
Well, right, and I could be remembering it incorrectly, but I felt like they were waiting to see if the Mountain would survive, because if he did, then...
That kind of sounds right. I mean, that certainly explains the motivation to, by all means, make sure the Mountain survives.
Right. You got to do like, it's like a redo after that or something.
They couldn't locate the Tome of Rules because they haven't needed it for centuries.
Yeah, right.
Where's the rule tome?
But I felt like they even tried to address that with Cersei saying in the scene in tonight's episode where she's all concerned that he's going to survive and she wants him, you know, he won't be weakened. Like, so she's concerned about having her badass knight around.
He won't be weakened.
Oh, no.
She wants to be Mountain the Mountain, I think.
But that's sort of the only reason she has Qyburn helping him is because she wants there to be no doubt about the outcome of the trial. It's not because she has further use for the mountain.
Morbid fascination with the occult.
Why did she ask the question then? If he'll be weakened,
they could.
Well, that's what I'm saying. They're trying to insert a reason for her to be concerned. when they'd already eliminated any real reason for her to be concerned about.
I was never even really concerned. Like, I guess I never even thought about that when I read the book. It's just like, oh, well, this guy got his head crushed, so he obviously
He's obviously the loser. Like,
I never thought, but who died worse?
Are they going to turn him into Robo Mountain, do you think?
Is that
where we're going?
It'll be a little mashup between a
mountain zombie.
I mean, something is happening.
Man, what if they made the mountain into another? That'd be, or a white took him up and.
Oh man!
Or maybe they create. He'd be whatever they do to the mountain, they use to create their own race of whites, and that's going to be the big battle.
Oh, whites versus whites.
Yes,
whites versus.
Ultimately, we want the Seven Kingdoms to band together. To find the common enemy in the others.
I'm kind of thinking I want them to all just burn. I'm rooting for the others at this point.
You don't even want Danny and the dragons to come purify with fire?
Nah.
Don't Ladies even care about that.
Man.
Put your hands together and give a warm Omaha welcome to Danny and the dragons.
There's nobody worth saving in this world anymore.
God damn it.
You're more dated than you are.
Pessimist.
Name one character. Name one redemptive quality of any of the characters in this show. Yeah, Davos. What do you like about him?
Don't ask me like that.
His short fingers.
His blind devotion to that brittle bastard.
See, you guys, you agree with me. You just
Bran? You can't hate Bran. Good old Bran. Nothing beats that.
He hasn't been challenged, though. We haven't seen anyone have to make... Bran never had to make a tough decision, you know?
Bran?
No, and whenever he wants to, you know, manipulate Hodor for his own ends, he doesn't have any qualms about doing it.
Who is the maester at Winterfell?
Did Hodor inherit some of Bran's learned combative ability? Because
no.
Hodor is a huge pussy, and anytime someone comes near him with anything, no matter how small they are compared to
people. But Bran knows how to fight.
Bran used to train in the yard with his brother.
So is that where... So he's controlling
that was Bran. That was Bran.
That was Bran.
Hodor, yeah, he got a pretty sweet scene. Bran was in control. Like, ass-beating some skeletons.
Yeah. I thought that was a good scene. Special effects weren't, like, great, but they were good enough.
They were pretty good. And Jojen died.
Right.
Jojen's not dead in the book, is he?
I don't think he is.
No, he's just sort of superfluous. He's like just nobody
lamented his loss. The next scene, they were just all like, "All right, what's this?" I mean, no one was. His sister was just like,
She's probably in shock.
Maybe she's in a shock, sort of thing.
It was sort of a wondrous little journey into the damp little cavern of roots.
Or maybe it was his words of, oh, he knew. He knew this was going to happen, so don't worry.
He knew what was going to happen.
He knew what this was.
Which is kind of cool, I mean, because he probably did.
Well, and there was a whole subplot in the books about him knowing when he was going to die, wasn't there? Mm-hmm. Something about that?
Yeah, because he even talked about it on the show. He said some... Some foreshadowing of that. I think a few episodes ago, his
sister knows about it too. His sister knows.
Maybe that took the edge off.
Yeah.
Oh man, now you're making me wonder about some stuff for next season. We'll see. I'm kind of excited.
Yeah,
source material.
I'm really curious to see. I hope they just ignore the next two books entirely. And
well, I'm excited.
Go their own way.
I said for the source material. I want to see what they do with. What was actually written? There's some good stuff.
I don't feel like there's any major milestones that they have to hit left. I feel like everything else that is in the books could take it or leave it and go their own way, and it would still be strong. Like, I mean, there's stuff that happened in this season and the previous season that had to go down in a certain way for the world to make sense, to align with the world of the books. And with this episode, they wrapped up all of those moments, like 8 of them.
I think I agree with you. I think you're right. The next two seasons, they could do almost nothing.
They could do anything they want now. Nothing else has happened in the books that's so near and dear to my heart that I couldn't take it or leave it.
Complete surprise now, like you're reading a new book, right?
Kinda.
They cannot let the show get worse just because the books did. They can't afford to do that. You're right.
Yeah, no, absolutely. They don't have to. They don't have to slog through anything else. Nope. Nothing else is crucial. Like 100%. There's nothing left that they have to hit.
Well, that bodes well for us.
It does. I mean, it's more exciting to look forward to. It's like there's like less of a thing of are they going to screw up the thing that I hope they don't screw up.
Right.
Now it's just kind of like I don't give a fuck what they do. I'm just going to ride now.
I'm just going to sit down with my jaw agape, just like what just happened here. Yeah.
Well, how often have I like said that I really felt like Martin lost his way in the last couple of books, where I feel like he didn't really know. He just started meandering around, and now he kind of almost doesn't know how to get back to the meat of the story. Yeah, to the main.
Maybe he's going to get some help.
It's totally true.
HBO's going to give him a little help.
Listen, unlike most asshole, self-important authors that have something like this happen to him, I feel like he's extremely grateful that this show was made and that his audience is now 1,000 times the number of people it was before. I feel like he's very, from interviews and just his general demeanor towards it, I feel like he's just like, oh.
His public profile is 10 times what it was.
He's got to be feeling the heat from that a little bit, though, now, too. Well, I mean, he's got the heat, just the basic production heat of, I got to stay ahead of the production of the show, which even he now probably is like, shit, they've like caught up to me more or less.
But he's gonna he might get help from them in this way. They might sit down with him, have a discussion, and say, how do you feel about the books going this direction?
Dude,
might
you really like, think no, a 700-page River Journey?
Why
is
do you say no?
He's not going to let the TV producers tell him how to finish his story.
But maybe he should.
I don't know, man. I would be shocked if some input that was given to him from someone else didn't make it into the books going forward.
I think it's safe to say Martin's never going to say, "Ooh, I never thought of that. I'm glad they thought of that. Now I have my ending."
Nothing that heavy-handed, but
it's not going to be like George Lucas is going to go back the 25th anniversary of Game of Thrones completely rewritten.
I wouldn't mind
now featuring more
Tywin
CGI.
Tywin shot first.
That is a perfect fucking internet T-shirt concept right there.
We should make that.
Let's sell that shit on Cafe Press like tomorrow.
Yeah.
Tywin shot first. What? Any other key moments in this episode? I liked
the Ygritte.
John and Mance. Well, I didn't like the fact that Tormund basically sort of guilted John into burning her north of... I mean, it doesn't fucking matter where you burn the corpse. That was pointless.
Oh.
It's just like, just go forth into the, others infested
woods. I thought he was talking about something else entirely.
But the let's drink to Ygritte.
All right. Oh, I thought you were saying...
I'll drink.
Sorry, I misunderstood.
Ygritte.
And what about Gren and Giant? No drinks for them. Fuck them.
to Mag and Gren.
Gren and Mag.
No, so tell me the one was like a 2-second shot with Melisandre looking at Jon Snow.
Yeah.
The fire.
Yeah. The shot that's that spoke volumes.
That's a big shot right there.
Yeah, totally.
So what do we think she thinks about Jon Snow?
She thinks he has King's blood.
Why does she think that?
Because he does.
We know that. But so does she have any real mystical insight, or is she just full of shit?
She has fucking mystical insight. You don't birth a fucking shadow baby without having some mystical insight.
All smoke and mirrors.
I suppose that's true. That's true.
She's got mystical energy up her coos.
She also is a charlatan,
too. Yeah.
She's a former charlatan.
Because, there's a scene in the book where, so they do the thing, Stannis is up there and he has his sword, which is called
Flamebringer.
Right.
Lightbringer.
And Aemon is like...
Burn swordy.
Maester Aemon asks Sam like what it looked like, and he's like, basically, that's like a bullshit sword.
Because it wasn't giving off any heat.
Right. It didn't give off heat and change color or something.
What were they burning idols up then? In that scene, or
I'm not sure.
Okay, wasn't it? Didn't he just have a flaming sword when he
burning the unbelievers in the yard? Yeah.
I thought so.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But Maester Aemon knew it wasn't giving off heat.
Right.
Shireen and Lady Selyse.
Well, didn't she also have some sort of giant chest full of flash powder at some point?
In the books?
Yeah.
She has all her tricks.
Yeah. She was dolling his sword up to be the burning sword.
Right.
So.
And he was going along with that.
I'm taking that, you know, knowing glance to mean that somewhere over the next season or so, they're going to start delving into
all it really means is that she's going to show Jon Snow her tits sometime next season.
That's fine.
That's a given.
That's fine.
That's all it means.
And it's going to work.
She's going to melt his snow.
On me.
He's going to give her some snowy peaks.
You're drunk.
What about the whole Shay killing?
Loved it. Could have been bloodier.
Had problems with the actual.
It's kind of how it goes down in the book.
It looked like a low budget TV show.
You know, she really had the reach on him. I'm not so sure she wouldn't have prevailed there.
Exactly. She gets to the cheese knife first.
Just like put her hand against his forehead while he's trying to.
Some great gestures you guys are missing right now.
I've done that to somebody actually.
I think I've had that done to me.
Really?
I saw a cool shot of those two guys, Magnus von Magnussen, whatever his name is. And
the Prince Oberyn guy, just like chilling.
Yeah,
on
just
the,
chilling, like, and like good homies, just out. Like, it was a pretty cool shot.
Out at the club.
I needed that after that scene fucked me up so bad. I think I had a nightmare about it.
Yeah.
And then I saw them on the internet just like palling around like the two thumbs up. I'm like, oh, that's good.
I had a friend at work tell me that at the end of that episode where Oberyn gets his head crushed, that he was stunned. He just sat there for about 5 minutes just kind of staring blankly at his television.
Is there a YouTube reaction video for that?
They played it at a there's a bar in North Carolina, I think it is, or Virginia, that they showed it. And if you went into the bar, it was understood, don't talk, no one fuck this up, and be quiet. And there was someone, like, they knew it was coming. They, like, put the thing every... Oh, my God.
It was pretty brutal.
It really was. God, I knew it was coming. It didn't matter. It was...
You know, and really well done. Character. I didn't get to comment on that, but I felt like that was just, like, right out of the book.
His character was so good and noble to a point and libertine and just lovable and...
Yeah, a well-liked character. Yeah. I didn't even know how noble he was, but he's at least...
Maybe not noble. You know, well, he had a noble purpose. You know,
no doubt.
But and everyone's like, "Oh, he got cocky in the end." And undid him. He didn't get cocky. He wanted.
He got a little cocky.
I don't think it was cockiness.
He got too close.
It was righteous. His righteous anger.
It was really important to him that the mountain say.
I don't know. He looks and he smiles at his girlfriend, and as soon as he smiles, and then he just gets knocked down. That's cocky.
He'd longed for that moment for 20 years.
It's true.
30 years.
That's true. But he's like the only character who's not completely full of shit in the whole show.
Oberyn?
Yeah. And I'm not so sure the character was like that in the book, but in the TV show.
He went right up the chain, too, and he was unafraid.
Yeah.
He was unafraid.
Right.
Yeah.
And he was always like, you know, Tywin comes in and he's lounging. He's got his feet up on the table.
He was cocky then. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, but I'm just saying he's like, you know, he's not playing around. He's like tells everybody exactly why he's here. He hasn't made any bones about why he's here. Unafraid. He wants to, he wants to force Tywin Lannister to admit that he killed his sister.
I hate it.
It was a great character.
I mean, I knew
that's
it was
why
coming.
It hurts to see him get his skull crushed.
Wait till you meet his seven daughters.
Yeah, which from what I've read of the fourth book so far, it's like. They're pretty much are like revenge based family, or a lot of them are. It's like, oh, okay,
yeah,
that's where it's
except
new
for
revenge.
They hold grudges,
whatever
guys.
Whatever the hell he's got going on with?
Yeah, he's got gout.
Gout. Sorry, not a goiter.
Lloyd Gouter. Lloyd Bridges Gouter, guys.
Are they going to have special effects for that next season?
They'll just get some guy with gout.
It has
been looking for a job for years.
CGI budget.
Oh, come on. Really? You're perfect for this part. Just let us inject you with gout. We can't afford the prosthetics, so.
I guess what do we think about the battle where, Stannis' troops
Stannis'
show
arrival.
Up? Yeah.
Brilliant.
And the whole conversation there.
Great.
Yeah, I thought that was really good, too.
I thought the Wildling camp looked maybe kind of small for, I mean, you only
100,000.
You don't
men.
Really see 100,000. You just see like a little grove of trees and just a bunch trees. Of horses running into it.
But Stannis made a strong well, showing for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was at least better, you know, go back to the Daenerys assault on Meereen against that happened in one freaking alleyway.
Against the backdrop of what had just happened between Jon and Mance, Stannis and to even more Davos was the first time that I looked at them without any like allegiance to them or like hoping things go their way. They weren't underdogs for once.
Right.
I mean, well, that's arguable, but they came out on top for as far as that goes, and Davos was with purpose, and whereas before he was in he advised to Stannis. It was super noble and I loved it. I love his character. This time he was just flat, mean, like came in. I was kind of like, oh, they were just doing a thing though. Just hang on, you know, don't be. No, that's.
You picked the worst time to show up.
Yeah, right.
Like, which is great. I mean, and true to the books too. It's kind of just like Mance basically tells Jon, we've got you guys. So are you going to let us in or what?
Right.
And then Stannis shows up and turns the tables. I mean, it's fun, and you don't know what's going to happen there. I mean, what is going to happen to Mance and all of his wildlings? I mean, they're all captives now, you know, and Stannis doesn't give a shit. You know, Stannis doesn't give a fuck about anybody except himself.
Jon returned the favor.
Stannis has got the troops to take 100,000 wildlings captive.
He's
got horses.
They're unorganized.
He's in debt up to his eyeballs with the Iron Bank. But
yeah.
And the wildlings don't have anything of any value.
They don't even have the sense to kneel when they're about to get their heads cut off.
No, they don't kneel.
I think maybe Benedict Cumberbatch will show up in a later episode because he'll be like. The Iron Bank guy is going to be like, I'm going to call him my brother.
My brother.
Come collect my debts. Sherlock's on the scene. It'll be a
for the
whole other mashup.
Benedict Cumberbatch will show up as the voice of Drogon. To wrap it up, let's talk about off season.
All right.
So we're not going to have a new episode of Game of Thrones until like March of 2015.
Yeah. So what are we going to talk about?
I'll just say this without committing to anything tangible because we're want to let these things slide in the off season.
Well, I got to know whether I'm taking this podcasting equipment with me or not. Am I?
Is there a cast to be had in the next few weeks?
Yeah, man. I'm going to start casting ad hoc.
Cast hoc?
Casting as needed.
All right. Well, we'll let you guys know. But when we post another episode for Dark Wings, Dork Words will return in Octopussy.